Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Hey, welcome back to Comic Book Nation, the only show that does it all for geek culture and the official podcast show of comicbook.com. We are back in the studio this week with my regular co-host. Janelle Wheeler's back after a lengthy absence of getting married and crushing it at TwitCon. We have her back this week. Well, back in studio.
Sorry,
I forget, like, the last few, the weeks have been so confusing.
It's so weird when we're not in studio. Yeah. It's so confusing.
But yes, Matthew Aguilar is also here.
What up?
And we got no time to waste today. We do it all for geek culture. Usually we're all over the place. But this week, we've got some big guests coming through. And that means we do not have time to waste with the preamble.
Sure.
So, without further ado, let's get to who do we got coming in, Matt, since you set this all up so wonderfully.
Yeah. So we have the, of course, writer and creator of Spawn, Todd McFarlane's coming in. Also the helmer of one of my favorite toy lines, DC Multiverse. Is going to be in the house today to talk Batman Spawn, as well as I do have a couple toy questions to throw his way. And then, of course, we are talking about Black Adam as our, like, wonderful header image shows back here. So we're going to be talking to actor Bodhi Sabongi all about the movie.
All right. And if you're trying to watch this live, I'm not sure we're live anywhere right now, are we?
We are. Okay, we're back. We're back on YouTube, and I think Twitch
we're back
is
on Twitch,
firing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's firing up now.
Okay. So if you know our show, you know that, you know, We seem to be the one show here. We're in, like, the haunted time. We're like the Harrenhal of comic book shows here, in which we can never be sure our live streams will stick. But it's okay. You can always subscribe to Comic Book Nation on our YouTube page. You can watch us on Paramount Plus, you know, multiple times throughout the week. Or you can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. Either way, you don't have to miss out in case this stream goes down. And you shouldn't, because, like I said, we got a lot to do today. All right, up at the top, before our interviews come in, we have so much DC stuff to do today. Guys, you know, we are big DC fans here, and we even repped for DC this year, predicting that this could be DC's big year to overtake Marvel. We look like chumps on that right now, but at least now we've gotten to at least another big DC movie. We've been waiting since the Batman, and now, after the full slate we thought we'd have, we're to the other thing we got to do this year. Which is Black Adam, The Rock's Black Adam movie is now out in theaters, and we are going to discuss and review Black Adam. So let's just start there since we have the graphic up on screen. Mm-hmm. Oddly enough, Black Adam was not screened. There was no big screening down here in Nashville
That's
for
so
Black
surprising.
Adam, which was kind of a last minute surprise. If you guys don't know anything about the movie business, you know, you can usually tell how things are going or how a studio feels about the movie by their screening plans. Like, if they feel very confident about it, they tend to get it out early. They tend to have multiple screenings to get as much hype as possible. When they say, oh, we're not screening this before opening day, that's sometimes a reason to worry.
Sounds like it.
In this case, I think it was something different. And, you know, it may have been even more prudent and smart to do it this way. The point is, I had to go out last night. These guys were both busy. I had to go out and see Black Adam. I think Matt might have caught up on some of the things because, you know, it's out there. So
spoilers.
Yeah, Matt. Good. Even if he can't be there, he does his due diligence and research because he is one of our big DC experts. And I went out to see it. So what I'll say about Black Adam is I get their strategy with Warner Brothers because their things, if you can't see our graphic in the background here of the studio made by Peter, who does a lot of our awesome graphics every week. There is a big discrepancy between how Black Adam is being received by critics versus how it's being received by audiences.
Yeah.
It is. It's almost like, I mean, it's almost like a 2-to-1 difference, like,
man,
about how much audiences like it versus how critics are rating it. And so I get that, and The Rock and them may have been savvy by saying, let's not go through the whole humdrum of doing this for the critics. This is not going to be for them. Let's just do it for the fans. The Rock is a fans. I mean, he's a people's champion, right?
Yeah.
So let's do it for the fans and just worry about what they have to say. And and it might be prudent. It might be help them get to a bigger opening weekend, because there are a lot of Rock fans out there. There are a lot of comic book movie fans out there. And there are enough added people in this to kind of draw in some other people who might not come. Pierce Brosnan's like a big draw, for instance. So, yeah, Black Adam, they might have done kind of smart thing. But what I will say personally is, somebody who is a critic but also tries to keep in mind what, you know, the fan experience is. We are comic book nation, after all. I said in a tweet that I would compare this to a really good 2000s comic book movie, or even a good kind of like Marvel Phase 1 movie. In the sense that there are some good ideas here. It's taking itself seriously as kind of a both universe fixer and kind of universe extender. And I can talk about a little bit more about that in a minute. But it... The director, Kwame Coulombe-Serra, I believe. I always butcher his name. Yeah, Kwame Coulombe-Serra is... I think he's a very good and accomplished kind of B-movie genre director who's done, you know, a bunch of crazy things like House of Wax, The Shallows, Orphan, cool, those Liam Neeson movies like Unknown, Nonstop, and The Commuter, Run All Night, which is another that starred Liam Neeson. So he's done all these kind of crazy, you know.
I can totally see all of those in this.
Right, yeah. Right. So those are all kind of B movies. But he did the Jungle Cruise movie. That's where he hooked up with The Rock. And that's kind of where they decided they're going to do Black Adam together. I think this movie was a little bit beyond the scope of what, you know, Kwame Coulombe-Serra can handle in terms of making a blockbuster movie. There's a lot of unevenness in it. Action scenes are cool, big, and things. But the smaller scenes are, a lot of them are just ridiculous. And they're not ridiculous, like, in a bad way. It's just little things that they probably could have done to just make it more grounded, in one case, literally. Like, the decision, for instance, there's one decision that they made to have, like, Teth Adam, Black Adam, always kind of hovering when he returns to this certain spot, the set that they keep going back to in Kondak. And he's always hovering in these conversations where he's just talking to other characters. And it's just clearly The Rock on a rig kind of like floating there. And it's like, you didn't need to have this guy floating. Like, just put him on the ground, let him walk around, let him emote. Like, he can be on the ground. But in almost every scene, he's like floating above and doing all this stuff. And it's that kind of thing that you're just like, that's kind of hokey and kind of weird. Like, and it makes the scene,
I get why they did
weird.
That, though.
Why?
I get that. Because he does that a lot in the comics. And two, they're trying to get across. We were actually talking a little bit about this earlier, right? I think they were in that effect. I get why they did it. Whether it worked out execution-wise is one thing. But like, I understand how you're trying to get across this person who is literally feels like he is above certain things.
Yeah.
Why does he have to touch the ground? He doesn't have to. You do. That doesn't mean he does. So I know why they're trying to get across that feeling. Whether or not it worked is subjective, obviously. But I'm just saying, like, I get why they did that.
Oh, no, I get, yeah.
I get the film idea.
School, and you're right. That's a great insight. And it's a good film school reason. But it just means that, like, the blocking in the scene.
That means you got to do it right. You got to execute it.
And how it looks as other characters are trying to walk around this rig and him and, like, have conversations. It just looks funny. It's just a guy kind of floating. So.
Is he likable? Because I feel like I'm not getting a lot of like understanding of his character.
That's the other thing. This movie takes, I think, one of the things that, and a lot of feedback you hear is people are excited to see where this franchise and this character goes from here after this. And I think they Captain Marveled themselves in a way, in the sense that they had a plot and Eternals themselves in a way. They had a plot that they made overly convoluted.
Okay.
And they tried to have these reveals that are not reveals. That's why I said a 2000s movie. Like, if you've ever seen a 2000s, like, action thriller movie and twists and stuff, like, you've seen every twist in this movie. And you see them coming from a mile away. From, like, the very first scene. You're just like, oh, that person's going to be bad. And, like, and it's like, twist, he's bad. And you're like, not really twist. there's a whole thing about Teth Adams' origin that they try to keep secret that they ruined in the marketing and the promotion, which is namely his relationship like with his son and what happened there.
Yeah.
They don't make it a secret in the marketing, but it's a major secret twist of the movie.
Yeah, I think they, so they tried to make it a secret in the, like, in some of the marketing, and then in other parts of the marketing, which, again, we talked about last week. Like, there was a couple of those things done with this film, right? Like, the thing that we are obviously going to probably talk about at some point, but the big thing that even The Rock kind of alludes to before the movie's out, right? Like, there's certain things in the movie that they kind of, I don't know if they made the full decision. Like, they didn't quite commit either way of, like, we're not going to talk about this, or we aren't going to talk about it. You know, that particular thing as well. Yes, I totally get what you're saying.
Amateur Hour Noob says it would be much better seeing Black Adam as a villain and not an anti-hero.
Yeah, and I don't think they ever got a firm understanding of, like, who they wanted this guy to be and how they wanted him to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just The Rock looking menacing for, like, 2 hours. But it, me and Matt were discussing before this, it, you know, they've done a lot to overhaul Black Adam in the comics over the last few years. And I was saying he kind of gives you Namor vibes. Like, you know, he is kind of this king godly figure.
Yeah.
He knows it. He's arrogant, but he's witty. He's smart. He can talk and, like, all of this. And in this one, 10th Adam is, they do this fish out of water thing where the only real joys of the movie, like the laughs, are the moments where Tev Adams trying to kind of, you know, hinge and adapt and kind of catch up to where things are.
Okay.
And, like, there's a whole motif about him coming up with a catchphrase throughout the whole thing. And he doesn't know when to use it or how to use it.
Which is good. And that is something that they play with in this movie, because I'm trying to walk around spoilers. But, like, the fact that the way they handle him of being kind of bringing him back after a long absence.
Mm-hmm.
Lens, I mean, they did build that in to this movie. That isn't, like, something I necessarily would have, like, immediately gone with or thought to the top of my head for a Black Adam movie.
Yeah.
But I did enjoy that. But again, they built that into the movie. It's not necessarily something that I would have just leapt to, because I agree. I do like, but I also don't want, I don't like Black Adam as a pure villain. I think that's, I find him boring when he is a pure villain. That is not, I've seen those 10 million times. The thing over the last 2 years that the comics have really done is flesh that character out to be literally more of a hesitant hero. They've kind of Harley Quinned a little bit in that regard. And so he's always wrestling with that back and forth. That's way more interesting to me than him straight up being. So I like that they tried to kind of walk that line here.
And
with
let me be clear. I bring up Captain Marvel in Eternals specifically because Matt and I have kind of gone back and forth about how Captain Marvel did a plot line that essentially it restricted Carol Danvers' awesome personality and the kind of the fieriness because she had to be brainwashed. And so they had to kind of mute down who Carol Danvers was because she's this kind of brainwashed person trying to figure out who she is in most of that movie.
Yes.
And so it's only till the third act until she's taking off her shoes and, you know, drop kicking people in the face to, you know, a No Doubt song that you begin to really get the vibe of who Carol Danvers really is as Captain Marvel.
I agree.
Eternals did the kind of same thing where they used a plot line that made them restrict who these characters really were and how they really felt and what their real passions and operations were because they were keeping secrets and trying to fool you as to, you know, the whole Icarus of it all and all that. And so you couldn't dig into some of the fun, deeper things that were going on with the character. I get the decisions they made for Black Adam, but I think they made too many contradictory ones. Him not knowing what's going on. There's this whole other plot line in the film that's about Khandaq and it determining its own fate and the people there being like, you guys are not from here. You don't. And it's a metaphor for, like, the Middle East and all this stuff about you don't understand what you're doing here.
Mm-hmm.
This is our guy and we back him. And that stuff gets kind of muddled with the JSA and of it all and stuff. But it would have been a much more interesting thing if this guy's clear kind of attachment was, I'm here for Khandaq. I rep for Khandaq. I hurt anybody who needs to be hurt to protect my homeland. And there's a little bit of that, but not so much.
I agree. They could have done
a little bit of his personal stuff, but not so much.
Yeah.
And it kind of, but by the end, that all is out of the way. And there is a clear picture.
Yes.
Where, you know, who this guy's going to be and where he stands in his kingdom. And if you've seen the leaked post-credit scene, they spell it out pretty. They literally have somebody say, you know,
it's so weird.
These are the parameters for your character.
I'm not conflicted on this movie, but I am very much like, this is what I love about. I love origin stories in this manner. I like them when they're already into the story And then we're moving, but we're also seeing things fleshed out. That's not cool. Like a big, you know, I have to see you normal for half a movie or whatever before you get powers. Like, I'm not big. Like, I don't necessarily need that. It's fine in some cases, but we've just seen that over and over again so many times that it's like, it's nice to kind of hit the ground running for an origin story movie. And I say origin story in the fact that this is the first time we're seeing him in this universe, not origin stories in like, you know, how he got his power. But we get a lot of that. And I thought that was actually well done. There's so awesome. Okay, those scenes though, there are some amazing fight scenes towards the end of this movie.
Yeah, and it's even amazing. In the middle. Black Adam versus Hawkman is great.
Dr. Fate, oh my God.
Some great fights in here. And their action concepts of DC characters are really good. And I will say to what Matt says here is one thing that Black Adam does do very effectively is by starting kind of in the middle of this character coming back in this universe, they're able to kind of deftly move the universe forward. And Black Adam does the best job of any DC movie of bringing all the parts together.
Yeah.
Of saying all the Snyderverse stuff, all the Gunverse stuff, it's all one playground. We're not gonna like loosely allude to things or do that half gray, does it all exist together stuff. No, it all happened, they all exist. All these characters are in the same sandbox and now there's Black Adam and the JSA.
Yeah.
And so they do that very well in this movie to kind of bring the universe together and then put Black Adam in the middle of it as it's already, as Matt said, happening. Which is a good segue from just talking about Black Adam. So if you want a star review, I'd say I give it about 3 out of 5 stars.
Okay.
Yeah, I give it a solid 3 stars out of 5, Black Adam, for me.
Wow.
But that's a good segue into the other part before we get to our guest, which is, guys, we got a crazy amount of headlines for DC this this week. Yeah, it's nuts what's been happening. You just get these kind of information dumps about like
every week. It really was though. It was just like,
well, it's like every month we get like a check-in from one of the major trades to be like, is Warner Brothers still able to function? And it's like, here's where we're at. So just running down the list, Walter Hamada has stepped out of the building officially.
Crazy.
Yeah, he was the kind of head of DC Films through this last Snyderverse era. He was a guy who wanted to do all the multiverse stuff and, you know, ultimately kind of, you know, buckled and brought back the Snyder Cut after that whole debacle.
Well, at least he did that.
Well, he was also...
That's great.
I mean, he was also cited as by Ray Fisher as being one of the main people who kind of covered up the misdeeds and what was going on there.
Oh.
And
so,
yeah, there's that whole thing. But he's out. And so now Warner Brothers Discovery and David Zaslav and all the new executives are in the driver's seat. And yeah. Black Adam marks the changeover of when that happens. Last time we did this, it was Wonder Woman. James Gunn is taking on more DC projects. He has 2 secret DC roles that are coming and, films. And we tried to pump Jim Viscardi to tell us everything since he always seems to know everything, but he doesn't know. But he said Deathstroke movie and the internet nearly turned on him. So if you also...
What?
Yeah.
Jim said a Deathstroke movie for James Gunn?
Yep. Jim, send your letters to Jim Viscardi.
What?
He wants a James Gunn Deathstroke movie, and the internet came for him.
Good.
I'd be okay with that.
Not me.
Here's the thing. I'm not saying James Gunn can't do a Deathstroke movie. I'm saying that's not, of all the characters and stuff that feel like they would fit James Gunn's just natural, like the charisma of his characters, the banter back and forth, the charm, Deathstroke, the dude you can't even see for like half the time. Like, I don't know. It's just like, and he's a, anyway, whatever. Whatever. It's fine.
I'm down with James Gunn for anything, honestly. I just love James Gunn's
stuff. I agree.
Twitch stream is down. Party's on YouTube. Party is on YouTube. The Twitch stream is down.
Yes.
Will we ever get 2 streams? I feel like they just don't budget us for 2 streams and there's all right. Well, there's that. So we have James Gunn. Man of Steel 2 is back on the table. I'll put it that way. Man of Steel 2 with Henry Cavill, Superman, is back on the table. It is being worked out. It looks like Cavill's getting back in the super suit. We don't know when, but he'll be back. And Man of Steel 2 is now back in the running of possibilities for the DCEU. It's only been in like a decade, but here we are.
I just feel like they've been back and forth so many times on this. It's like Backstreet Boys, quit playing games with my heart.
I forget. Did we get a director rumor? So many things happened. Did we get a rumor director for that? Was it Macquarie?
That is the person like that sources say like they would like to get him or a type. Right? It's one of those. It's like, we would like someone really like him, but if we could get him, great.
Oh, he's on the wish list.
Yeah.
Because Macquarie does write and direct now. And he did wonders for the Mission Impossible movies.
Yeah, man, those movies are awesome. So.
And so like, yeah, and he's really come up. He got out of director jail for Mission Impossible with Tom Cruise, and he worked with Henry Cavill on Mission Impossible Fallout.
And that was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was
shunk, shunk. Come on, man. How you not gonna love that?
Yeah, who doesn't load their punches now? and that's now back in the running. We could be getting Man of Steel 2. Matt Reeves is doing a bunch of Batman spinoffs from the Batman universe. They are plugging this thing and getting every drip drop they can out of it. We've heard that he's going to be doing spinoffs for multiple villains. Who were they? It was like Clayface and who else?
Was Mr. Pig in there?
Clayface. Yeah. Scarecrow, Clayface, Professor Pig are named, but yes. He's doing movies, not just TV shows, that are going to be about more Batman villains. I guess they saw that Joker thing happen. And
Matt Reeves and Professor Pig.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking of like the Dahmer thing. And I'm like, can I sit through a Professor Pig series? Like,
yeah, I don't
that's
going to
be a hard
yeah,
sell.
I don't know if I can.
Because Professor Pig is
rough.
Truly disturbing.
Yeah.
And rough. Yeah. And that pig face. And I mean, it's going to be rough. But, let's see what they do with it and how many of them we actually get before we get too upset.
Right.
All right. We're so excited. That's what's going on. So the Batman universe, they're flexing out. We still got the Penguin series. Arkham series is still happening. I wonder if the Arkham series will be the lead in to these other ones, which would be interesting.
That would make sense.
Yeah. So we'll see how that goes. But and a Zatanna for Matt. A Zatanna
series.
It's being shopped around.
It's not canceled yet, but it is being shopped.
But that should have been an easy
come on!
For so long.
Oh, by the way, I'm going to throw something out here. This will probably be my Jim Viscardi Deathstroke thing. I'll get
oh,
whatever.
Oh, gosh.
Dr. Fate lit up Dr. Strange.
Yeah.
Dr. Fate's scenes are
not
lit so
up
much
Adam.
Cooler.
Not Dr. Strange.
No, Doctor Strange.
Oh,
Doctor Strange,
he lit up.
Magic
Ooh,
to magic, fight to fight, battle to battle.
Ooh, that's
Doctor Fate
words.
Wiped the floor with him. They were so much cooler.
No way.
In a fraction of the time. Yes. Here, let me have a shiny disc. Oh, hey, here's another shiny disc. Let me open a portal with the thing. I have.
But
I have.
Haven't.
So okay. I'm just saying,
with
not even close.
With that comment alone, now I don't want to see the
movie. Not even close.
Now
anyway,
I'm like mad
you
about it.
You're welcome.
Okay.
You're welcome.
We got to get going. But yeah, man, I just want to say like, yeah, a Zatanna series is an easy layup.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
so many good things that you do. The relationship with her father, that's flashbacks, modern day.
It just makes no sense.
Magical investigation. The backwards talking as a signature.
It makes as much sense as canceling a Batgirl movie that was fully done. And then
yeah,
trying to get your Flash
insane.
Movie and then reportedly having a sequel
already
kind of already on deck. Anyway.
Yeah. All right. We're on a time schedule. We got to keep moving today.
Let's go.
So Matt, why don't you, I think we're ready for our first guest. Everybody turn on your earpieces. Technical note, everybody in the studio, turn on your earpieces. That is on the case.
This is live.
But Matt, I think we're ready for our first guest.
Yes.
Who is up first today. But I think, do we have to take a break first?
We're supposed to.
We should take a break. So let's
go
ahead
and
take
the bills.
And then come back.
And then we're going to come back. And then we're going to have the guests. And it's all going to be good. Come back. Comic Book Nation.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Welcome back to Comic Book Nation, the only show that does it all for geek culture and the official podcast show of comicbook.com. We just talked about Black Adam and what is all happening in the DCEU. Now we're going to talk a little bit more DC, but in a different format. Matt, who do we have to welcome to the show right now?
Well, I'm very excited. We have writer and toy creator extraordinaire, Todd McFarlane. How are you?
Hey, everybody.
Hey. Hey. Welcome.
Welcome back.
Hey,
welcome
back. I like your hat. SD, let's go.
Let's go, Phillies! Todd, are you an Eagles fan?
I'm going home a winner either way.
I walked right into that, didn't I?
Let's go, Phillies!
No, when I was a kid, the Phillies were horrible and I loved them. And the Padres were horrible. I'm going way back to the early 70s when they just came into existence, the Padres. And Philadelphia was horrible. But I had this sort of weird thing that I liked all the bad teams in sports. And then when they become good, I don't really like them quite as much. But
that's great.
But either way, I don't right now. I mean, I got a slight bet for San Diego, but if Philadelphia gets in there, bam. My favorite player of all time, Steve Carlton, Philadelphia, wow. Phillies. So
nice. We're it's good to see the Padres having a moment, though. I'm excited.
No, between the Phillies and the Eagles, it's a great going, time to be
before
a
get going, I missed your Black Adam review. What's it? What in 2 seconds? What is it? Because I'm making the toy, so I need to hear this.
Real quick. All right, go for it. Go ahead.
I would say it is a really good franchise starter. It reminded me of a really good 2000s film.
No. We're wasting time. On a scale of 1 to 10, just give me a number.
Okay. On a scale of 1 to 10, I'm going to give you a 6.5 to 7 out of 10.
Okay. What about the rest of you?
I get to see it this weekend. First movie as a married woman with my husband. I'm so excited.
Shoot, look at you. First movie I took my wife to was the very, very, I'm going to age myself, the very, very first Halloween movie.
Oh my gosh, so appropriate.
It came in and she got up and she went, I'm out walking out of this movie. Right? just to put it in perspective, she was 13. I was 16. So, but I went, no, just wait 5 more minutes. I'm sure it gets better. And she sat through it, I think because she liked me, not anything to do with the movie. And she hasn't watched a horror movie since. Over 40 years ago, I scarred her on that one. So be careful what movie you watch your husband.
The first one we watched was Endgame, and I was sobbing. That was really embarrassing.
Oh.
But this is our first married one, so I think it'll be good. Hopefully I don't walk out.
I can't remember what first movie that
I've been with my wife for 21 years. I don't remember. I have no idea.
I'm a newbie, so.
21 years ago.
It was probably one of the Despicable Me movies, I'm not going to lie.
Oh my God.
What it was?
No, we went in college, we started dating, and we went to the first of those midnight showings, Lord of the Rings, The Matrixes. Yeah, that was the first thing that I dragged her to, and that's why I knew she was a keeper. She would come out and go to a movie theater with me in Pittsburgh in the middle of the night.
That's
and
so
was like,
great.
Yeah, all right. So, yeah, there you go.
But when I went away to college, because I was older than her, we went to a movie. It was on New Year's Day because I had to leave that morning to go to college. And it was Brooke Shields and Endless Love. And for my wife and I, it's one of the great classics of cinema history. and the Endless Love theme song was the one that we played at our wedding. So it had that big of an impact on us.
The game so much smarter. I took my wife to see Gollum and you're like, take her to Halloween so she has to grab onto your arm or Endless Love to get
Precious.
The going.
Precious.
I was like, we left after this. Seeing Gollum for 3 hours and was like, so honey, how you feeling?
Well, because I know your time is oh so precious, so thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. I am excited to talk Batman Spawn. Very excited for these two characters to come together again. I know, so this one, of course, is with Greg Capullo, and I know you guys were going to work on a project before, and then that kind of just, you know, never quite happened. You released some art and stuff from it from time to time, but did any of those ideas make it into this new one, and what can you kind of tease about the new story?
I would say the general idea of who's Batman compared to Spawn, right? And so the two characters sort of intrigue me. And way back when, I think bad guys were going to be like Clown and Violator, because it was like, hey, I'll give you my funny guy, you give me your funny guy, right? And it was just sort of low-hanging fruit. It was easy to do. But what was more interesting that I wanted to tell in that story, and I'm doing a little bit, not quite as much in this one, is the fact that the one guy, you know, Spawn, is burnt, and all he wants to do is get back to the woman he loves and be normal and be human, and basically doesn't want any of the superhero stuff. And Bruce Wayne, he looks at him and says, man, look at you, you're handsome. You could be on GQ. The women are throwing themselves at you, and you don't give a shit about any of it. You want to go and sit and wait till 2 a.m. and then go get your black costume and scare the crap out of people. it was this, like, I would give everything for what you have. And it was almost, you know, like Batman going, shoot, if I had a little more powers, I could scare him even more. Right. So I'm going to be touching on the, not only the similarities of the characters, but then some of those differences, and not getting heavy handed, because I said in another interview, I think I could do an entire book that is one guy at one podium and the other guy at the other podium, do a 20 page debate on how do you see the world, Al Simmons and Bruce Wayne? Why do you see the world that way? And what do you do about it? I think that it would be an interesting psychological thing, but this is a comic book. I don't want to get heavy handed with it. So they butt into that a little bit, but essentially both methods, whatever they are working, because both of them are still alive and are in the war, right? So
right.
They're just going to agree to disagree.
Time in the Batman mythos has certainly grown and changed since you started doing Batman Spawn in 1994, back with, you know, Frank Miller.
Yeah.
What made you
change? Just so you know, the biggest change for me is that I couldn't change one thing. They were like, if you deviated the thickness of the belt, it was like, no.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like 50 Batman costumes and or iterations of the character. I'm like, what?
Wow.
Anybody can do anything now. So yeah, they were really, really tight about their character back then.
Okay, well, that was an unexpected but great answer. Yeah, I didn't expect that one, but yeah, that's interesting to hear that they're very fixed about where Batman is right now, I guess. My question was actually, what made you kind of approach one of the newer villains in the Batman mythos, which is the Court of Owls? Was that always your choice, or was that something that you were also kind of guided to?
No. If you guys hung out with me a little bit, you would see that I literally wing it almost every day, right? So I don't have any big, giant, preconceived plan to take over the world quite yet. I haven't figured that one out. What I do is go, oh my God, I got a deadline. Something's due on Friday. We better get something done.
That's the story of my life.
I know, seriously.
Yeah, no, it's true. given that I knew a little bit of the parameters of sort of a bare thin thread of a story, my first call was to Greg Capullo himself, and I wouldn't have done it with any other person, because Greg, it had to be Greg. And I just went, Greg, what do you want to draw? And whoever he said he wanted to draw, whatever he said he was going to draw, I was going to be able to figure out what I wanted to do within the confines of those characters, right? So if you know that you're going for the touchdown and the end zone's over there, all the plays in between are less important to me as long as I get to the touchdown, right? So for Greg, it's like, hey, who are we playing today? I know we're going for a touchdown. Who's the defense? Who we're going up against? And so he went, hey, Quarter Owls, you know, we get a lot of pub on those. People liked it when Scott Snyder and I were doing it. I still get a lot of emails and texts about it. So yeah, it'd be kind of cool. Instead of, you know, the obvious would have been to do more Joker stuff, but you know, we both felt that there's no lack of Joker out there in the So I mean, but if he said Joker, I would excuse me, I would have done it. But he essentially, Greg Capullo chose the Court of Owls. Now, again, this sort of seems mystifying, I'm sure, to scholarly writers going, all the same shot. So you made the deal, you went and negotiate the contract, you get your guy, and then you ask, hey, who's going to be in it? Yes, that's exactly how it happened. So, like, who cares about how we make the sausage? Whether, you know, do people like the book at the end of the day, or don't they? And how we got there is really not overly relevant to hopefully the you know, enjoyment that, you know, hopefully most people have.
That's great. Okay, so I have a quick question, really quickly. If you could pair Spawn with any of the movie Batman, which movie Batman would you think fits the vision for your Spawn the most? I got it. I actually made him think.
It's weird. I haven't seen the Batman that's in my head yet on film. So,
wow. Oh, that's a great answer.
But I have a bent sort of mindset that, you know, if you're going to go dark, my, and again, I understand that corporate America has to do what they got to do, and they've got brands or whatever else. Like, but in my head, if you're going to go dark, right, mm-hmm. That means the way you know you've done it right is if you bring your mom and you bring a 5-year-old and they both leave within the first
10 minutes. I love that.
5-year-old is crying. Then you go, then I did dark in the proper fashion.
Right.
So for instance, I went and saw this movie my daughter brought me to a couple years back. Is it called It? The one mm-hmm.
one? Yeah. Oh yeah.
And that's and it. The whole time I was watching, I was just bugged by this movie of going, oh my God. Now, again, on one hand, I admire it that I went, they have figured out how to do horror and sell it to the masses. And the way they did it was the clown would come and it would get tense. And right when it was going to get just a little bit too tense, they cut to the kids and they say a fart joke. Right. And I was like, oh, so they're just going to keep throwing jokes in the middle of the dark, just to not let people know they're in a dark movie. So then it's not that dark. I don't know. I mean, if you're going to go, then you go hard. But that's me. And that's why
I love that. Fund
the companies that I understand.
Just to follow up, what is it you think that you haven't seen them bring to the screen for Batman quite yet that you envision kind of needs to be brought?
That to me, and again, for this is the world according to Todd. Now, again, so I'm not saying that anything I say has to be agreed upon by any other human being.
For sure.
So, mm-hmm. But what I relate to the most about Batman, and maybe it's just my personality, is him just coming home. He's got, like, again, tons of money and can do whatever he wants. And he just sits. And then at 2:30 in the middle of the night, 2:30 a.m., he turns to Alfred and he goes, get me the black costume. Because I'm going to go scare the shit out of those fucks. Right? I understand that guy. They've been scaring us. They've been torturing us.
Oh my God.
So guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to let them feel exactly what they've been doing to us. Get me the black costume. It's time to go. So I haven't quite seen that guy yet, but that's okay.
Okay. I'm ready.
I can't show a lot of toys and paraphernalia.
American Psycho vibe.
I mean, when I was writing my Spawn movie, I turned to my toy people and go, just to get you prepared, there's nothing in the script that basically is going to sell one toy. You could see they're scratching their head going, hold on, isn't this your company, the toy company? Yeah. And you wrote a script that won't sell any toys. Yeah.
Oh my God.
The hell's going on, Todd? And the answer is that for me, in my perspective, I try not to let any tail wag a dog. So when you're doing a comic book, do it the best you can within the parameters of what people's expectations are in comic books and how they enjoy and read comic books. When you're going to do a video game, then use those same sort of criteria. If you're going to do a movie, just do a movie, right? I mean, look, at here's the reality. If we ever get, and we will get this Spawn movie off the ground, I have to acknowledge that 98.5% of the people that go to that movie, if it's successful, will have never bought a Spawn comic book in their entire life. Yeah. Nor, and the vast majority of them might not even know there is a book called Spawn, because the globe's a big place. And what we got to do is put out an entertaining movie, period, finito. Mm-hmm. Not worry about whether it's a great representation of issue 55. So,
absolutely. That's great. You know, you mentioned toys, and I can't let you get out of here without talking just a little toys here. I've loved the White Knight figures in the DC Multiverse line so far. They've been fantastic. You know, one, I guess, what do you... what do you think about that universe's kind of visual design and everything? And do you want to do more from that universe in the line?
So you're overthinking it. Here's my mentality on toys. We're selling toys. So again, going back to what I said, don't let the tail wag the dog. I don't necessarily pick the figures. We don't necessarily pick the figures because they're popular in comic books. Sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't. I pick them because they just look cool in package hanging on a shelf.
Yeah.
Right. And at the end of the day, again, the vast majority of people are going to be walking up and down an aisle, maybe at Walmart or Target, and are not comic book collectors. So the question is that a cool looking Batman? Is that a cool looking Superman? Is that a cool, is anything in the package cool? You can do a cool, I mean, if I can do something that looks good on shelf, in a package that Solomon Grundy, because he looks like a monster and a 7-year-old kid will react to it. Woo, I win, because the fan who's buying it because it's Solomon Grundy, he's already going to buy it anyway.
That's true.
What I need to do is get past that. I need to say, can I get this into the cart also of somebody who's just walking down? And so it's not by accident that we pick a lot of characters that just look good. Right, the costumes are either bright or they got some cool detail or they're a monster or something. I mean, I just go, okay, if I was 8, would I want that? and then the fans that know the product, again, like the White Knights, are going to get it anyway.
Right? That's true. I bought them all.
So it feels like you got this business figured out.
I bought every single one and they're awesome. So Todd, thank you so much.
Big too. I always said too. Big figure, big toy that have a lot of plastic. You can sell that all day long, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, again, it didn't even have to be that good, but if it's good and it's big and you're selling it for the same price, right? I mean, again, big chunk of plastic, $20, or you can get the human or you can get the skinny little female, all $20. I don't know. Some point, take the big chunk of plastic.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to jump on the show. Of course, everyone can check out Batman Spawn when it hits on December 13th. Thank you, sir.
Sure, I'll show you some of my work in progress here. The Batman right there.
Oh, my gosh.
Little Spawny right here.
Like
that
with bicep.
Is so
oh, look
sweet.
At that. Oh.
Yeah, we're just working. Greg, I think, just finished up his last pages, so now all the pressure is on me. I got to finish inking it and eventually write it here. So
that's beautiful.
We'll get there. Here's what we're hoping to do. We're just hoping to come up with an entertaining book that reminds people why they're in this hobby, which is just cool to look at. It was a fun read, and it was one of my favorite artists. And, you know, he used to get inked by Todd a lot. I mean, like, it's a little bit of low hanging fruit, and it's an event book. And this is, I know when I collected, when sort of event books came out and crossovers especially came out, I was always willing to, I had a big curiosity bent to do it. And if somebody had told me that the artist that's doing the book happens to have made a giant mark on both those characters, that's that's really never happened in any big crossover, that the guy who, or the artist who's doing it, made an indelible mark on the one character, Spawn. You know, he did 80 issues for me, and then moved over and made a mark on Batman. It's the same dude, and he gets to draw both of them. So if you were a fan of either one of them, that's the same guy. So it's not like you're going, oh, John Byrne's X-Men are meeting the Justice League of America. I've never seen John Byrne do the Justice League of America. It's what if John Byrne was doing Justice League of America and the X-Men, and they did a crossover and John Byrne did it. Woo! Yeah. To me, as a 16-year-old, that would have been awesome. So we're hoping to just do one of those books that all of us remember when we first started collecting, that just sort of gave us a little bit of a smile on our face. Not deep, meaningful, philosophical, just a hell of a comic book. Get on the ride, the roller coaster, ride it for 48 pages, get off and go on to your life.
It's beautiful.
Man, well, I cannot wait. Thank you so much. And I super appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for your time. You guys be good.
Thanks, man.
You too. Bye.
All right, Matt, roll us the next guest we have.
Yeah, so this one, we are excited. We talked about, this is a very DC, by the way, we didn't plan this out. This is a very DC-centric show.
Roll it down for our DC piece, yes. Okay?
Of course, we're going to talk about Black Adam, and you can't talk about Black Adam without getting into some of the rest of the cast. And Bodhi Sabongi is joining us to the show. Now, he is playing the character of Amon, and this is the character that Kofi was referring to earlier, as far as like there's some secrets revolving around Amon in the movie and stuff. So, you know, we'll try our best to kind of, you know, walk around certain things, But when he jumps in here, it might take a second.
We're waiting. Richard says we're still waiting on Bodhi to kind of jump in here.
Should we slide into comics while we wait?
Yeah, we can slide in. We'll do as much comics as we can gets here. Because it's easy. Have you guys ever had the dream where you walk into class and you realize like you're unprepared for a test?
Yes.
Well, that's me right now, because I just realized I didn't read to any of these comics. I completely forgot to read comics. I ended putting my kids to bed and was like, oh, I got to read those comics last night. I think I fell asleep and I think I completely blanked. One of them that I want to really read and need to know the end of.
Oh my God, yes.
Batman the Night. So yeah, this was the weird week where I forgot to read the comics. And now I'm having that nightmare where I was like, hey, what are we doing next? And I was like, oh, comics. I was like, cool. And I was like, oh man.
Okay, so let's start. Okay, so let's start with actually Crypt of Shadows. That'll be a perfect way, because we can get into that, and it's a series of short stories. So if we need to cut, we can kind of cut around it. Janelle, did you read
either of these? I started this. I was just, can I just say that, like, well, it was big.
Let's just put it out there. I'm coming off of vacation. She's coming off vacation.
I was off
Matt's
a couple days.
Been, like, off, too. We've all been on vacation. I think we all drifted out to sea.
Read the whole thing, because it's very interesting, because the whole thing that kicked off was the fact that Doctor Strange has a brother.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry, what? That was my big takeaway. That was my moment that I was like, wait, hold on. I did not know this.
So we'll start with Crypt of Shadows.
No, we can't now, because now Bodhi's here.
Bodhi.
So we'll come back for Crypt of Shadows, our total comic unpreparedness on this show called Comic Book Nation in 1 second.
Wow.
Richard said, I think we are ready. So.
Well, we have the wonderful Bodhi Sabongi with us from Black Adam. And let's bring him in here. Hey, that's us.
That's us.
Hey, what's up, Matt and Kofi? How you guys doing today?
Nothing, chilling. From Black Adam. You know how it is.
That's amazing.
But yeah.
This is
There we are.
Yay.
All right.
Hey, Bodhi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing good. Sorry for the chaos a little bit there.
Don't worry about it. It's okay.
It's live.
Congratulations, man.
Yeah, seriously, man, this is a huge movie.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
You've had a chance to work with a great cast. Of course, one of the most electrifying people on the planet, The Rock, is in this movie as well. You know, what can you tell us about working with him, and you know, how was the experience overall?
I think it was just being able to see him do what he does firsthand is just so amazing, considering he's like the biggest movie star on the planet, and everything he does it right. Like when he's making a movie, he makes it with the audience in mind, and he executes. And it was just so impressive to be able to like be a part of that. And not only that, be a scene partner with him.
Right. And that dude never stops working.
Yeah.
that guy's got what, 90 businesses now? It's crazy.
I think it's more like 190.
It might be. Yeah. I think him and Shaq and Steve Harvey are in the running for like the most companies ever.
Yeah, Ryan Reynolds is coming up too.
So, you know, I just have a question, because if it is The Rock you were with, he didn't like give you any kind of like, you know, promo lessons, did he? I mean, he's one of the best wrestling promos in the world. Did you get a little some of that carry over at all?
Like his lessons to me?
Yeah. Did he give you any promo lessons? You know, you got to have them for like later in life.
How to come into a room, stop everybody, that type of thing.
I mean, I think I'm sorry. What was the last thing you said?
I was just making a joke. Did he show you how to kind of use wrestling promos to come in a room and kind of command everyone?
Basically, every time I showed up on set, we would have like, there was a ritual at the beginning of every day of filming where we would all wrestle each other. And yeah, it always like the championship bracket was always me versus The Rock. I won easily every time, but.
Well done.
That's great.
Your character plays a very kind of surprisingly pivotal role in the film. Can you tell us, without any spoilers, what really attracted you beyond the cast, The Rock, everything, about the role itself? What really kind of grabbed you and engaged you about it?
I mean, it's impossible right now to not bring up the idea of representation. Like, that's always going to be a very big topic about this. Like, growing up, like, I'm Egyptian, and as someone who, like, I never really saw Middle Eastern and North African people represented, like, in a positive light on screen growing up. And this did feel like a really great opportunity. And like, especially like me being a part of it, my goodness, like it's definitely special for me to be able to do something like that for other people out there. But aside from that, like I got to learn how to skateboard for this. I didn't skateboard before the movie. And then I'm also making a movie with The Rock. I know you said besides that, but like, I can't really put that aside all the way. It's still The Rock. And then also not to mention Pierce Brosnan and Noah and Mo and Aldis and Q. It's every single person on the cast is so impressive and so like, so amazing at what they do.
As a follow-up to that, even your character's name, just his name, is a major signal flare to DC fans who know these books and know these characters.
Oh yeah.
How was it keeping the secrets of Black Adam through production all the way up to release day? And do you feel some kind of kinship with those other Marvel or DC actors that have to, you know, either keep secrets or outright lie, dodge press, you know, hop out windows to avoid answers?
I think the best part was, I think DC made it really easy. They put it easy on me because not only did they not say who I was, they didn't really advertise me. So no one really ever asked. So I never had to lie. I just.
You just didn't offer up, you know, like anything.
It's not lying if I'm just staying silent. I would just get like in the wise words of Michael Scott, I wouldn't be lying. I would just get really quiet all of a sudden.
He needs to talk to Tom Holland.
Wow. Wonderful.
Bravo Michael Scott on the Office reference.
Yes. Good job. Oh my God. That's awesome. Okay. So just a question. Behind the scenes, is there any one moment that just like was a standout special thing that you will always carry with you going forward?
the very first day I worked with him, when I say him, you all know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The Rock.
It was just this scene like in my bedroom where I'm standing there, I'm trying to get him to become a superhero or whatever. Like it was in the trailer. And it's just this thing of like this when he like picks me up, puts me out of his way. It was in one of the trailers for sure. And the way we did that was like I would stand on this platform that would like, it was just electric and it would like raise up like this. And I was standing on here. So basically I had to like kind of lean back a bit to like compensate for that so I didn't fall over. But I was doing my first scene with The Rock, so my brain wasn't working very well. So I got to lean. So I kind of just, it just went up and I just fell forward onto him. I kid you not, he actually caught me and just picked me up with an arm and actually put me down to the side. And I was like, whoa, okay. I mean, I knew you were strong, but like,
oh. You're like, we don't even need this platform. Like, he can just do this on his own.
I genuinely think he's stronger than Black Adam. Just, you know, I think that would be a good fight.
Is that the scene they used, by the way? I almost kind of wish that that's the scene they used, if that's the take they used.
I don't think it was. I wish it was too. That would be awesome.
Like, no, he actually just caught me.
I just have a quick follow up to that. It brings up a good point when you mentioned that scene, that in a lot of ways, and it's not a spoiler to say this, I think that there was a fair amount of put on you and to kind of help bring some of the levity and comedy moments with you and The Rock. How was it working with him in that sense, with like comedic timing and comedic beats? We know he can be big and menacing, but how was he kind of doing the comedic thing?
I think his comedy was more about like what his character was doing instead of like how it was being done. I think a lot of it was in the storyline, and I just want to call attention to how amazing his like actual acting was in this movie. Cause a lot of people like who don't understand what he does are like, oh yeah, he just plays the same character every time. It's not true at all. He's a very skilled actor, but I think being in a scene partner with him and having that role of trying to like keep the comedic pace and like bringing my own aspect to it. Of course, needless to say, it's special to be able to say like, oh, I brought something to a scene with The Rock. But I think a lot of how it was done relied on just everything and how the movie was set up. And while I'm glad I had this role, I think everyone had their chance to contribute what they contributed. And I'm glad that I had something to contribute to.
Oh, for sure. You know, so of course, in the comics, and like Kofi alluded to, the name alone kind of gets people's radar up, right? Good comic book. People's radar up because that character then goes on to become Osiris in the comics. And then there's a whole bunch of stuff, right? And comics are their own thing. Movies don't always do what the comics do and all that, obviously. But, you know, if the character was, you know, kind of decided to go down that path and you did kind of get to occupy a role like Osiris in something more of a, not a villain role, but just something a little bit more, you know, kind of conflicted, always kind of trying to deal with those back and forth between being a hero and a villain. Is that something that would excite you? Is that something you'd be down for?
It would kind of really excite me. I hope it goes on that path. Like, obviously I don't know what's going to happen. And again, as you said, comic books and like, they don't always follow them, but I think that would be a really fun character. Just being able to experiment with that headspace of not knowing what you are in terms of good or bad. So I would definitely be open to that. And I mean, needless to say, being able to be a superhero would be awesome too.
I mean, yeah, powers don't suck, man.
Yeah.
that's I need that on a shirt. Like powers don't suck.
That's actually a really good question. It leads into this. If you could have your character appear in any DC movie going forward, who would you love to cross over with?
What I love to cross over with.
Yeah, like what DC character? You're gonna say Batman, aren't you?
Yeah, I am.
Everybody says yeah, Batman. I am. Everybody says Batman.
It's because it's the right answer. Look, so my favorite superhero is Batman, just because of the whole energy of I'm vengeance and like that whole thing. Like yeah. I just love that, right? And if I can get in a movie with that universe and just how that works, that would be amazing. So if that crossover could happen, I mean, I again, just like powers, that wouldn't suck.
Speaking of which, I have a very specific prop question for you. Oh, there are several scenes in the movie set in your room, and your room has a lot of DC character memorabilia kind of decorating it. One of those things that, you know, is in there is a particular toy that comes that is featured in one scene. You know, really, and it's a Batman toy that's in your room. What Batman is that?
I don't know. I'm not gonna lie. I'm not entirely sure.
Don't let them pressure you. They are experts. Like they.
No, I generally don't know because it's a very quick thing. But I saw it and I was like. The scene makes it clear which versions of these characters we're talking about in your room. It's very clear. That was the one thing that I wasn't clear on, and I was hoping maybe you knew.
He's looking for answers.
I would love honestly, I don't think there's ever been like, there's not a bad option. If it was Ben Affleck, that would be amazing. If it was Robert Pattinson, that would be amazing. There's no wrong way for that to go. But I don't know who it is. That's a good question.
Okay.
It's Val Kilmer.
Is Val Kilmer?
I'm just saying.
Oh, everything. It's always Val Kilmer. Always.
Val Kilmer's Batman is up. No, I'm not going to get that.
It's underrated. Batman.
Okay. You got underrated. Me so excited there for a minute. I was like, really?
Also, George Clooney is the best Bruce Wayne.
Okay.
He's a great Bruce Wayne. He's a great Bruce Wayne.
I'm sorry. We don't.
He is Bruce Wayne.
We don't usually let him out in front of guests out of the basement.
All right. Well, this is the last time I'm on this show. So thank you, Bodhi. This has been amazing. Thank you so much for taking the time out. All the best success. And can't wait to see what you do next, Bodhi.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Good weekend.
Bye.
That was awesome.
That was so cool. That was really fun. I'm excited.
Well, I love this so much.
After all that, I guess we could talk about our half-assed comic reading this week.
Wow.
Yeah. Matt did the job, I'm sure.
Adam West is also great. You know what's funny? I actually don't, because in the comments, Damon said it's Adam West. There's actually a debate right now going on in the comments about who the best Batman is. I think everyone has, like, every movie Batman at this point has their defenders. And even TV Batman. I don't think there is one that's, like, universally, like, there's, like, some movies that everyone dunks on or whatever. I don't think that's that way in the Batman conversation. I think it's everyone, there is a group for every Batman at this point. I think you could make a case for any of them. So let's move into Crypt of Shadows, number one. So, real quick, this was as Janelle mentioned, this is a long book. It's, like, 56 pages. It is a one-shot Halloween special, so very much like if you're not in that wheelhouse, like you don't necessarily need to pick it up. However,
it's fun.
It's
great for the holiday.
It also starts off, in my opinion, with the best story.
Yes, because I agree.
Bloodline, there's, of course, Blade's daughter is going to get a big push next year and everything. And Bloodline, the first story is Bloodline, but it's not like an origin story. It's not like anything like that. It's just a kind of cool, in the middle of an adventure thing. It's her like on the way to a Halloween party and like she's just got to go do this one thing and then it becomes a bigger thing.
Yeah.
The art was gorgeous.
Oh, so pretty.
I thought it was just, I don't know. It made Bloodline just like really relatable. I think it's great for new people. Like if people jump into this and they'll go, who's that?
Yes.
Oh, Blaze's daughter?
100%. Blaze's daughter,
yeah.
Like need to know more. Absolutely, right. Yeah.
So I think in that respect, it works really well. And that's a great start to the issue. And then it's kind of hit and miss. Like there was a Moon Knight werewolf by, literally it's called Werewolf by Moon Knight is the story. And I went, oh, that's the one I immediately want. And I like liked it. I didn't love it. But then there's an Elsa Bloodstone story. So like I said, if you've been following the recent Disney Plus MCU stuff, you're gonna probably love this. The Elsa Bloodstone story is great. Again, it captures the character. It's really, really fun. And there's some gorgeous art. And then the final story is like this, kind of, it's between Man-Thing and Laura Kinney Wolverine, and it's like this story of like this battle between them, and they explain why the battle is happening, and it's like just this series of domino effects that like why this battle keeps going, and it's kind of brutal at times. There's some slight eating of people. it fits the holiday, whatever, but it is interesting. I did find the premise interesting. So again, this is not a must read, but I think for those who love the season and love this type of story, you'll find something.
Agreed.
And then we get into Batman the Knight number 10, the finale. We've been following this from the beginning. I feel like it's safe to say that this has become one of our favorite books of the show.
Can you spare me some spoilers?
Yes.
Okay, so,
because I really am excited for this.
Yes, I can. Yeah, I can. Yeah. Okay, so I'll go around it. This is, to me, this delivers. I thought this delivered on this whole journey of Bruce and Anton. And by the way, they clarify some things. Kofi's written some stuff about, you know, Ghostmaker and things like that, and allusions to and everything. Like, this makes things very clear. But just the Roz Bruce of it all. I thought this came together in such amazing fashion. It really brought all those things you've been looking for that we've been identifying along the way of what makes Bruce Batman eventually. Mm-hmm. It coalesces them all into one place.
Yep.
all of the things, like, there's some really great moments towards the end that just...
Well, they're twists, like things that, like, I don't know. In a lot of comics, like, I feel like I can call shots and mm-hmm. I know what's going to happen. In this one, there were at least two moments where I was kind of surprised. Like, I was like, oh, wow, like that, this is cool. Like, I'm totally digging it.
How he describes what leads him to the cave mm-hmm. is awesome. That whole moment
of
like. It's
such a full circle situation. And yeah, there's a big payoff. If you're a huge Batman fan, even if you're burned out on Batman,
right? Because you kind of are still,
yeah.
And this is still managed to
it is your attention. So different. This does not even feel like a Batman any of it to me. This just feels like a hero like coming up story, which I love.
Also, I've always been one of the people that's like, I don't need another Batman origin story. As far as I don't need to see the pearls, I don't need mm-hmm. to see his parents dying for them.
Yeah. Like,
it's ingrained in my brain. There are certain things, right? Uncle Ben and Bruce Wayne's parents.
Yes.
However, Chip, again, they touch on that. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I have ever seen a moment like that. The way they depicted them mm-hmm. and that moment.
Yes.
I don't think I've actually ever seen that done this way. And with the... That's so hard to talk around. I don't think I've ever seen it done that way. And there's one key moment in there why, and we can actually, I'll talk about it next week after Kofi's had a chance to meet it and point out what that moment is. But I don't know. I thought it was just so effective and it was just a small thing.
I'm glad we're kind of saving everyone from like spoilers, because I hope everybody kind of chews on this one. Like, I hope people read this one, watch it.
Yeah.
If you mean, please be on camera, sure. Like it's be live action.
When this comes out in trade, we will shout it out here, because like if you haven't been reading, you should definitely go pick this up. I thought it was fantastic. And I think honestly, at this point, I would almost say it's going to be in every mandatory Batman list I write from here on out.
Heck
of like,
yeah.
Hey, here are the books you absolutely need to read to understand Batman.
Right.
This also might be my favorite tackling of the origin, even though it's only hinted at of like certain things that happen in movies. I think it's so well done. So anyway,
agreed.
That's Batman it's the
fantastic.
Night.
Fantastic.
Quick mentions for me: Aquaman Andromeda #3. That was the Black Label Aquaman book. The first two issues were. Oh, we're good. I was mixed on them. The third issue is outstanding. The third issue is actually what I wanted the whole series to be, just in one issue. Mm. This is fantastic. So, you know, I feel like you do need to kind of read the other ones to understand what's happening. But man, they did a great job. And then Radiant Black volume 3 is out. So if you want to check up on great comics, that is a fantastic one. So that is comics for me. Anything else we wanted to touch on before?
Flashpoint Beyond came out.
This week. That's right.
I literally just did not even open the folder on like one of the best weeks of comics, and
it was a good week in comics.
You have all weekend.
Yeah, you have all weekend now.
Drink some wine, take a bath. That was me yesterday.
First week, read the comics. Magic Mike's Last Dance.
Ooh. Love it.
But Selma Hayek feeling some Channing Tatum abs.
Oh, should we all nice. Be lucky on I Friday. Like that.
Wow, this
way. Hey, you're a married woman now. Chill out.
I can dream.
Marriage doesn't stop your
dreams. Marriage does not stop your dreams.
Anything, it only kind of keeps it up.
Nope. We're not going to keep going with...
Anywho, you guys, this was such a fun show. I love the interviews.
By the way, I saw in the comments that... someone said, I don't know who said it now, so if I am not shouting you, I apologize. I'm not sure who said it, but they said, you know, Comic Book Nation has a great fan base when we bounce from stream to stream.
And I went,
damn right. That's exactly
you guys
right.
Just popping back and forth. Thank you so much for tuning in and sticking with us.
Sticking
we
with
really
us
appreciate
through a crazy,
you guys.
Crazy, crazy live stream.
Yes. Crazy.
So, that'll be it for Comic Book Nation. I guess I do got to outro this thing. We are on Apple Podcasts. Please subscribe there. Please subscribe to the Comic Book Nation Podcast YouTube page. Also, follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Nation. And you can see all our designs. Comic book, we got new logos now.
Great.
We get fresh out here. Somehow we don't have it on our stuff on the show yet, but we'll do that soon. Thank you, guys. Follow us individually. You can find all our Twitters out there. And we'll see you next week. Oh, there are Twitters on the screen. Thank you, Richard.
Ooh,
this has been Comic Book Nation. We out. Peace.
Bye, guys.